I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
2-3 The Fan. Welcome to the noon hour. We start things off on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We bring in friend of the show, Mark Sessler, who calls NFL.com home. And obviously we know his background, especially when it comes to the Browns, and we always appreciate that. So, Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
Hi, Mark.
We are hanging in, trying to kind of still dissecting the schedule a little bit because, I mean, nothing gets more exciting than trying to figure out things that you've already known for the last couple of months. But I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It's, the first thing I was charged with doing was writing a column about the easiest schedules around the league. And I'm looking at this thinking, this is the closest thing I'll do, the closest I'll come to writing just pure fiction. Because in early May, how do we know?
You're right. Mark, didn't you have the Browns? Do you have the Browns at number 4 on that list? Is that right? Fourth easiest.
Well, the Browns
schedule?
Are on that list, and I here, you know, I think number 1, what happened to that entire AFC North last year was getting dealt the rugged card of the NFC West. It was a contributor to 3 of the teams in that division not making the playoffs, and you know the Steelers had their own injury problems. Cleveland was bit with one of the stranger seasons we've seen, but I think a lot of things look different this year. On paper today, when you get the NFC East with the Redskins and the Giants, and you know they have the Browns, I think at the fourth, you know, easiest in terms of strength of schedule, which I put literally no stock in today. But it's, you know, from a bird's eye view, it's a minor factor.
The way it laid out for the Browns, Mark, along with the opponents and everything else, I thought they sure could have done a lot worse, and it gives them a big opportunity this year, I think, to just kind of go about their business. You know, they don't have their playoff teams early on, very many of them, and it just sets up real nicely, and I couldn't have agreed more with your assessment on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, what happened last year, too, and it kind of reminds me of what is unfolding for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is that Cleveland became that flashy offseason team. The schedule makers, you know, they looked at the Browns hard and thought, with Baker Mayfield and what's around them, let's put them on an endless slate of primetime games. And really early in the season, too, when they were far from a team that looked ready to really gel and compete the way that people expected. And there were a couple high-octane, nationally televised losses that didn't help at all. I can think of the Niners game comes to mind, where this year, there's only 2 primetime games, and for me, I like the idea of them being a little bit under the radar. As you mentioned, you know, when there's a tough game, there's a couple games around it that give you a chance to get back on track. I mean, they open with Baltimore. You like getting Cincinnati early just because, depending on what this offseason looks like, week 2 for Joe Burrow will still be a trial by fire. You get the Redskins after that. And in general, it does seem to be more of a manageable late than in years past. You know, you're always going to be dealing with the Ravens and the Steelers, and the Ravens have never been a bigger challenge than they are right now. But Cleveland's schedule looks, with the talent they have, to be one that you look at and you say, if they're not 10-6, I don't understand why.
That's a good point. Mark, you know, it's funny, you were talking about the Browns being on national TV last year as many times there. The Patriots are going to be right back there on national TV, and it seems like if there's a team that could burn them from putting them on national TV too much, it could be the Patriots with Jared Stidham. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it doesn't seem to matter who the quarterback is. That team's still getting respect as far as primetime games.
They are. I feel like Dallas is another team like that where they could go 2-14 and still every year they're going to log them for 6 primetime affairs. But when I think about New England, there's got to be a huge chunk of the country that would be interested in seeing the Patriots struggle on national TV, or if the Patriots are having one of these seasons we've not seen under Bill Belichick ever, since maybe his first season there way back when. An underdog getting beaten up by others, it's such an unusual sight for pro football fans that I think there is certainly an intrigue factor with Jarrett Stidham, with the Patriots in general. My thing about that is that once it's been witnessed a few times and they're just an also-ran, if that were ever to be the case, well, then you're stuck with a bad team on national TV and the interest factor would lower. There's another thing that could happen here, though, because it wouldn't shock me if the Patriots, who will still be armed with the best coach we've ever known, goes 9-7 or 10-6 themselves and becomes interesting in a completely different kind of way with a whole new cast of characters.
Mark, we had free agency. We had the draft. We had the schedule come out. And now we have what in the NFL? I mean, they were able to do business as usual for a while, but now what?
You're right. I mean, the NFL has mastered, especially in the offseason, these tentpole events that when there is basketball and baseball, the NFL can put out a schedule and it can take over the news cycle for a full day, or the draft itself, which was so welcome this time around. But you do walk into a bit of an abyss at this point because there's no next thing. I mean, in general, we'd be going through rookie mini camps. You'd be going through some sort of, you know, voluntary camps down the line here and heading in towards training camp. And all of that is a massive raging question mark at this point. So it does feel a little bit different now. I mean, even covering it, there's no obvious next thing. And the bigger question about if and when anything will get back to normal is a significant one. And I looking at what Dr. Fauci had to say to Peter King in his column this morning, I think he said it best. We just don't know. The coronavirus will lead the way on that. And there's really never been anything like this for the NFL to confront.
Mark, I just want to go back to the schedule for one quick second. So the same week that the Browns make the trip over to Pittsburgh and we have the Myles Garrett reunion, you know, that looks like that's going to be a 1 o'clock game. But also that week you've got the Packers in Tampa Bay. And we're just kind of thinking that the NFL probably are trying to hide the Browns, not hide, but not make as big a deal about the Browns going to Pittsburgh for Myles Garrett's return to the city of Three Rivers. Just your thought of on that. And, you know, and in some ways that's probably the right thing. There's going to be a fight after school, but not everyone's going to have to be there.
Right. Yeah, I'm not. I would say one of the least surprising developments looking at the schedule is that the return to Pittsburgh was sort of buried in a early day, time zone right there, because I think that's the last thing they'd want to, you know, hype up. I mean, it's the opposite of, say, boxing or something where you'd want to leverage that to the nth degree. It will still be talked about nonstop, but it probably was. I think also you got to think about it from the angle of Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett. And it's not something certainly that Myles Garrett wants out there to be celebrated and talked about on national television. If anything, he's of anyone on the roster needing a fresh start. And I think he's going to have a great season. He's a great player. And I don't have a problem with that one being buried a little bit.
Mark Sessler joining us from NFL.com. If you're the Browns and you're Andrew Berry and you've had a successful, I think, offseason so far, what are you looking for still? And do you think you need to do anything, Mark, to this football team before you get into stuff that really matters?
I think they'll be very, very active in terms of churning and refining the bottom third of the roster. If you wanted to look at a potential bigger name, I mean, Jadeveon Clowney's been linked to them for so long now, and I think at this point Clowney's camp is coming to the realization that if it's not Seattle and it's somewhere else, that the money will be a lot lower than expected, and it would probably be a one-year deal. Everson Griffin's still out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if he wound up back with the Vikings just because, you know, their relationship between those two sides is still good. He said he's open to it, and you'd be going to a team where you knew the system. Now, if Cleveland was really looking for one more guy, he would be an interesting person to add. So I have those two people as sort of larger names on the radar, but I would expect the Andrew Berry front office in general to always be open to making changes that might surprise some in terms of lower level guys on the roster and constant activity. I don't think they'll rest on any level. Now, it's a little bit different this time around because if camp doesn't operate the same way, it takes a huge layer of scouting away and players that you'd be looking at. And some of those cuts that come later on, you know, you're dealing with players you might not have a lot of tape on if they're younger.
And actually, kind of going back to this whole Myles Garrett a little bit, and money, is he worth – I mean, there's a story last week talking about maybe perhaps $25 million a year for Myles Garrett. How does that happen?
Wow. Well, you have to measure your entire roster and where you are at that point. I mean, the Browns have – you know, five or six guys making a lot of money. Where we are in a couple of years, that price tag may not look totally outrageous. There's only a couple of quarterback chasing pass rushers that you even think about paying that way. Personally, mm-hmm. when I look at Myles Garrett and what he could mean to the Cleveland Browns, and really if you took away the incident at the end of last year and what he would have become over those final six or so weeks, I think he is worth it. If that's what the market is dictating at that point, it's tough when you get into a scenario where you've got four or five guys commanding 25-30% of your cap, if not more. But the cap keeps going up. You know, most of these teams can find a way around a lot of this stuff. And the Browns do have the benefit for now of not paying, a hugely expensive quarterback salary. But that could be the next thing that could be coming up next. And then they're sort of looking a little bit closer to what the Dallas Cowboys are dealing with over the past couple seasons is you pay DeMarcus Lawrence, but then you've got all these other guys to pay too. And it's hard to keep rosters like that together without a lot of finagling.
Mark, we touched on that earlier in the show because the Browns have a couple of key guys at points in their career when they're on those first contracts, and they're going to have to pay them coming up sooner rather than later. If you're the Browns, what kind of value do you put on keeping Nick Chubb here long-term and maybe Kareem Hunt, who obviously is up after this year?
Well, running back has been such an interesting, and I think for running backs, unfortunate position to be playing at times because it's tough to – these second contracts for veteran backs have really been hit or miss. I mean, you can look at what happened with Le'Veon Bell in New York last year. I mean, he's due for a bounce back. I don't have a problem paying someone like Christian McCaffrey money like that because he's younger and he does everything and there's just no sign of slowing down. You're certainly going to get value from him for the next 3 years. But then you've got Todd Gurley on the other side. When I look at Chubb, he is the most fascinating running back they have had since the days of Ernest Biner and Kevin Mack. And if he's staying at this level, you have to find a way to keep him. I do wonder if the future of running back contracts will look a little different. Shorter term, big money, shorter term, where you pay them what they're worth, but you're not tied to them for half a decade. And, that may be better for the player too, where then they can, if they keep that value up, they can go find a deal somewhere else or sign even a third deal with their current team. Chubb to me would be someone, he just feels like the heart and soul of the offense. Without him, they've lost a huge chunk of their identity, so it's certainly a talking point.
Mark, last question. I'm curious just about the big picture stuff because I mean we've sat here for 15 minutes and we've had some really great football conversation, but the NFL pushes forward like there's really like they have to, and I don't blame them. But how optimistic are you that things are going to be somewhat normal in the fall, like, especially the way we look at the schedule because they made it so they can condense it. So whoever you play in week two, you can play in week nine, or if you've got to lop off four games here, we can move four games to the end of the season, and it doesn't matter when the Super Bowl is. Just straight from the heart, what do you think is going to happen this season, and what do you think they – obviously they would like it to play out the way it's written out, but what do you think?
Well, so you asked about, my optimism level, and I think with everything attached to – what's happening, it's sort of like a 5 out of 10, meaning it's sort of a coin flip. I just think that it's one thing if we knew, this is going to get wrapped up in the next 30 days and a lot of life is going to come back to normal, or at least to some degree. Now, there's going to be questions of people even wanting to go to a football game or wanting to go to a concert. There's the psychological angle to it. Even if things were okayed, I think that would take time on its own. That said, when you hear things about a second wave, or to me, it's the larger problem of, forget second wave. Let's say, you know, people have been throwing these out for a while. This is not an original thought, but you lose Patrick Mahomes to the coronavirus for 2 weeks, and it's week four of the NFL season, and there's a massive, total, raging competitive imbalance. It's not the accepted situation of, you know, someone could tear up a knee or, you know, break a bone. It's this absolutely bizarre wild card that you could lose an entire team to this. If someone tests positive, how do you not shut down the entire franchise the same way the NBA chose to deal with it? You have to be responsible. It's not about, you know, pushing forward with games. And I think the NFL has absolutely looked at this like, you know, the medical side needs to check out. It's not about putting players at risk. The players' union is going to be very focused on that too, players' families. So at this point, I want to be optimistic, and I think the NFL at least is saying, we're going to prepare for it, versus just think, you know what, let's just do an 8-game schedule now. Prepare for the full thing. They're very good at adjusting if they need to, but it's a total coin toss. I could see I don't know what happens with college football. To me, that's the first chip to fall to some degree. If you can't have people coming back to college campuses and you can't have college athletics, that to me would be a huge indicator that the NFL would face some issues on their own, big questions to tackle, and, you know, unclear. I certainly hope it happens in some form, because I think if you even watch with the draft and other events, you know, it's giving people something to enjoy, but it can't be at the expense of anyone's health. And I think they've said that from day one.
Mark, I'm going to throw one more quick question at you. Let's just say the NCAA says there's no football, or maybe even football is going to move to the spring. Does that put pressure? I know we've heard that they're not expecting anything crazy for the supplemental draft, but you got to think there's some guys that can make a lot of money in the NFL that might say, you know what, man, if there's not going to be football in the fall, I want to try to get in the supplemental draft.
I think that's an absolute possibility, because the problem with moving, you know, college football closer and closer to what would be the draft is just the cost and the risk reward for players that are looking to build a career. So I think it would be, you know, even if it were delayed at all, I think the college football season would look very different. And the supplemental draft, you know, is a huge opportunity for some of these players just to make a statement about what they want to do. And, you know, if anything, it seems like college football is sort of veering in that direction, because of the, you know, 20 years ago, it would have been unheard of to have a rash of players sit out bowl games. But that's sort of just becoming more common practice for some now. So if you're looking at a really fragmented, delayed, strange college season, a lot of players are going to be thinking about the future.
All right. Hey, Mark, appreciate it. Appreciate your perspective on everything, too. And we will talk to you soon. Mark Sessler from NFL.com.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks for being a friend of the show. Thanks, Mark. And, of course, Mark was on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. A lot of stuff to...
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.